So, Bill, today's program is entitled "A Diamond Is Not Forever." Did you actually believe a diamond is forever?
Well, actually, when I got engaged, I gave my wife a graphite ring and told her diamond will eventually become graphene, and we'll just cut some of the cost, and that didn't work out too well.
Okay, and the argument that graphene is the more stable allotrope of carbon.
Diamond will eventually decay to graphene.
It didn't go for you?
No.
Okay. The nice thing is that for the cost of a decent diamond pendant, you can get yourself, if you're willing to do, you know, the less perfect version,
right.
You know, a 55-gallon drum of graphite.
Okay.
Didn't work for me. I tried it on an anniversary, spent several weeks on the
maybe
couch.
If you took a bath in it. Or stuck your head in it and for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think that would actually be worse.
Yeah.
Right, but regardless, we're going to be talking about this amazing material called graphene and how it's got some very interesting properties and may represent the future of electronics. Is that a fair statement?
I think so.
Okay. All right, it's going to be great. So coming up next on Inside the Black Box, graphene.
For the best new music, tune into Earwax every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on 91.1 FM. Every week, the music directors bring you the best music that has been recently added to WREK's rotation, spanning all genres from rock to jazz to noise to classical and beyond. That's Earwax, Thursdays from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on WREK Atlanta.
Most days go by without a whole lot of surprises. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? Would you be prepared? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov.
Welcome to Inside the Black Box, ladies and gentlemen. And due to a few technical difficulties, we started a little bit late. And it appears, due to some sort of plot, our disclaimer has disappeared again, Trent?
Yeah, something like that.
All right, so we'll do the disclaimer live. Mm-hmm. Just to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that the opinions expressed here on Inside the Black Box, especially Bill's, do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. But we're glad that you're able to join us here today on Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science only funnier. I'm Pete Ludovis, and as always, I'm joined by my ever effervescent co-host, a man who, when he has electrons, prefers Auger electrons because French electrons taste better, Bill Hunt. Do you prefer Auger electrons?
Grapefruit electrons, actually.
Grapefruit electrons. Do they have those? Is that a new...
Auger,
they discovered that out in Switzerland now?
Yeah.
With the
new
collisions?
Well, Florida.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So
yeah,
get your
Auger.
Own... Oh, I get... Ah, you're way above me.
Boy, this is how you know I need to
right.
send you
OJ
notes.
As in orange juice, as opposed to OJ as in Pierre Auger, the discoverer of these secondary electrons popping up.
You'll pick up on this stuff just, you know, like a snap.
Okay, Auger electron spectroscopy, ladies and gentlemen. Look it up. It's absolutely riveting. All right, so as we mentioned earlier, the title of today's program is A Diamond Is Not Forever, because diamond is not the most stable allotrope of carbon. It is, in fact, graphene, which is the subject of today's show. And Bill's going to introduce our guest.
Right, so we're very fortunate today to have Walt DeHeer with us, and I'm actually reading from his Wikipedia page here. His area is condensed matter physics, also called solid state physics. So this is kind of the area where you take materials and start looking at how electrons move around, other properties of those solids, physical properties. He earned his PhD in physics from UC Berkeley in 1986 under the supervision of Walter D. Knight, known for the night shift, by the way. He worked at the École Polytechnique Fédérale in Lausanne, Switzerland from 87 to 97, and then joined Georgia Tech's faculty as a Regents Professor in Physics. He directs the Epitaxial Graphene Laboratory in the School of Physics and leads Epitaxial Graphene Interdisciplinary Research Group here as well in the Materials Research Science and Engineering Center. Well, welcome to the program, Walt.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, before we get to the miracle of graphene, let's begin the program as we often do with...
Science in the News.
And today's Science in the News article actually comes from Baltimore, Maryland, where Veolia Energy recently increased its presence by picking up this district cooling system in the middle of Baltimore. And it's really not a particularly technical story, but despite the fact that we don't necessarily have quite all the tax incentives to move over to green energy and renewable energies, there are still companies like this Veolia Energy North America that are doing very simple things, simply taking advantage of the fact that electricity is cheaper at night, using that via standard, chemical, mechanical refrigeration, and producing large tanks of ice that produce cooling water during the day that are circulated around downtown Baltimore. What made it efficient, I guess, is the fact that the piping system already existed. So they picked this thing up and then went ahead and now are cooling many of the large buildings and complexes in downtown Baltimore simply with ice. So complicated isn't always necessarily...
So is it working?
Yeah, it's working quite well. In fact, they're delivering it at a pretty good discount compared to, you know, your standard refrigeration. And I think the take-home lesson there is, we all like gasoline. Bill, he mixes it in the hair gel, I think. Gives it that...
Siphoning it is one of my hobbies. Yeah.
And the nice thing about that is, you store stuff chemically. And, you get a high energy density when you store stuff chemically. Right. And the next best thing to that is a phase change. So always remember that. Even if you're doing, regular refrigeration, air conditioning.
So phase, in this case, is like solid to liquid.
Liquid to gas to, say, for even what some of Walt's colleagues over in physics here at Georgia Tech do... Bose-Einstein condensates, although I don't think they're actually using that to store energy right now. But yeah, and that's why you take ice on a camping trip. You put it in the cooler and the ice stays in there for 2-3 days because the energy to convert something from liquid to solid, solid to liquid, liquid to gas, is huge compared to just changing its
temperature.
Changing its temperature, right? So, ice, as simple as it is actually an economically viable way of providing air conditioning for metro areas.
Cool.
Simple, but it works.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right, now we need to get on to graphene.
Well, I think we have a little intro, musical intro.
A little
intro.
Special intro.
Carbon to the core, graphene.
that was lyrics by Andy Zangwill in School of Physics, who he wrote this in, I think he said, like 4 minutes, and he had never actually heard the song Cocaine before. Mm-hmm. It's originally by J.J. Cale, made popular by Eric Clapton. That was Paul Neitzel from Mechanical Engineering playing the guitar and singing.
And he sings like he snorted some graphene, actually.
or that he needs more lead in his pencil.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying he sounds authentic, like he's singing the original song. Guitar work was great. We're just excited that Walt has his own theme song.
He does. He's the first guest to have his. We've even had Nobel Prize winners that don't have their own theme song.
We should do this more often, though.
We should.
All right.
Anyway, a little entertainment, great song. So why don't we get into it a little bit? What is graphene?
Well, I guess Bill already answered that. It's the most stable form of carbon. And in fact, you probably know it as graphite. And graphite is basically what's in pencil. So graphene is layers of carbon, sheets of carbon, really, and all very, very flat. And if you stack it up together, you get graphite. And if you put graphite together in a random way, you'll get charcoal, basically. So we all know that, basically, in one form or the other. But that's what graphene is.
So, like for pencil lead, for example, the fact that it can come off in sheets allows you to write with it, right? So that's kind of the physical aspect of that material that allows you to write with a pencil.
Right, right. In fact, graphene is derived from graphite, and graphite actually comes from writing, from graph. In fact, that's one of the versions of. So that's where it's all how it's all connected, and of course. That you can write with graphite was known since Greek times.
Mm-hmm. And we also learned just before the show when we were talking, for those of you that are heavily into the Cub Scout Pinewood Derbies, the only lubricant you're allowed is a dry lubricant. So a lot of people use the graphite that people will lubricate a lock with, these sorts of things. And Walt, before the show, you were telling me that the way that works is I always assumed you'd slide these individual sheets around, but without water in between them, it doesn't work so well.
That's right. Water is essential. If you have a completely dry graphite, it will become action abrasive. So it's either a suspension of water or it's in air. But if you do it in a vacuum, your graphite lubricant won't work, as I found out the hard way when I ran a motor in a vacuum and it ground to a halt. And I learned actually from a colleague at Georgia Tech that that was the reason.
So this is a vacuum system down to basically what you'd have in deep space in terms of the number of other atoms around. And so you think, well, this will lubricate my pump, which is keeping the vacuum low. But turns out no water, no lubrication.
That's so. Right.
Right, or if you're in like a giant room filled with, a desiccant and molecular sieves to suck almost every molecule.
Isn't that where your wife locks you on Saturdays?
Indeed she does, and with good reason. But so the point is, don't race Pinewood Derbies in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. Valuable lesson.
Not a good idea. It's not good for the Cub Scouts either, by the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what can you do with this material?
Graphene is now seen as a possible substitute for silicon, or actually not a successor. So a lot of people know that silicon is being used for electronics. And ultimately, we have a problem with silicon, and that's very well known in the semiconducting industry, that in the near future, you won't see your computers running twice as fast every 18 months because silicon can't keep up anymore. And so the semiconducting industry has been looking for many, many years for alternatives. And one of those turns out to be graphene. So that's why there is an interest and why people are looking at it so heavily right now.
So it had all these, and it had its recent beginning, if you will, in the buckyballs and the carbon nanotubes. We had Sir Harry Croteau talking about those. So, but it, as you had said before the show, nobody was really thinking about the electronics.
Yeah, well, graphene has a really long history going way, way back. People knew that that graphite was made out of graphene sheets in the 1920s already. And in the 1940s, it was a guy who actually was able to do the electronic calculations and calculated everything to do with graphene and electronic structure and everything. It was very well known to people in the graphitic community, and there were something called graphite intercalation compounds, which work with graphite, putting stuff between the sheets.
So intercalation is just a chemical term for getting stuff in between different parts of a molecule.
Well, let me back up there a little bit. Graphite is just a stack of these graphene sheets, and people wanted to modify those properties to turn it electronic material, so there's a whole industry in putting stuff between these graphene layers to change the properties of this graphite.
So you would keep the sheets have the same chemical or molecular structure. It's just what you put between
the sheets. Right. And this all comes back down to a very important part of graphite. Like Bill already said, it's the most stable form of carbon there is. In fact, the graphite's one of the strongest materials in the world. You cannot melt it. There's no vessel that can contain graphite to melt it because it has the highest melting point of any material. Hmm. So it has many amazing properties, but probably the most amazing one is that it's like a molecule. So the atoms are bonded in a very regular fashion, a honeycomb lattice. In metals, that's not so. At the same time, these electrons can float around over that sheet and under that sheet, really, almost with huge conductivity. In other words, they barely have any resistivity. So that was known, actually, for a long time as well, that carbon layers conducted electricity very well. And in the last, in the 1990s, there was a flurry of attention in so-called carbon nanotubes. And so people learned a lot about the properties of graphene from the carbon nanotubes, and that's how I got into the picture.
Cool. Because you were doing carbon nanotube stuff before you got into this.
Yes,
right?
and that really is, without any doubt, that's how historically graphene developed, from my point of view at least. For the same reasons as people are interested in graphene right now, they were interested in carbon nanotubes in the 1990s because they thought they could make better transistors. So there was an enormous amount of interest in that, and we had quite a bit to do with that. My group found, for example, that the electrons in carbon nanotubes could flow through them with virtually no resistance. Wow. And that was a very important eye-opener, saying that this stuff might be able to be used for electronics. And so many places, in particular IBM, started focusing heavily on the so-called ballistic conduction of electrons in carbon nanotubes.
Cool. Well, we've got to take a break. We'll pick up with ballistic transport in a second. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on WREK.
This message is brought to you by the New Forces Radio Hour.
I remember the days when things were real bad for me. It was right after my accident, when I lost my hand. It seemed like I was all alone, with nobody to help me. You know, I almost gave up all my hopes and dreams. But then something inside me kept telling me, way down inside me, over and over again, to keep going on. Yeah, on.
Hold it!
Tuesdays from 11 to midnight on 91.1 FM.
Things are better for me now, because I found that I love music. So I learned to play the drums and got myself a band. And now we're starting to make it.
Why am I going to college? I'm going to make a difference.
I'm going to do what makes me happy.
I'm going to be the first in my family to graduate college.
I'm going to work hard.
Be independent.
Live large.
I'm never giving up on my goals.
I knew I wanted to go to college.
But figuring out how to pay for it, I didn't have a clue.
The U.S. Department of Education has over $100 billion.
That's a lot of money to help students pay for college.
And the free application?
You mean the FAFSA.
I did it online. It was easy.
I'm going to follow my dreams.
Make the most of every opportunity.
I'm going to find out how to pay for college.
I'm going to college.gov.
Need money for college? The U.S. Department of Education can help. Find out more about planning and paying for college at college.gov.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box here on WRAK, where we're talking with Walt Dehier from the School of Physics here at Georgia Tech about graphene and its amazing properties and what may make it sort of the future of electronic materials. But if you've got a question or comment about this and you've heard anything about it in the news, by all means, if you're listening to us live Wednesdays noon to 1, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468.
So right before the break, you mentioned ballistic transport. And so let me kind of couch speed for the semiconductor industry. So there's this thing called Moore's Law, which is really more a edict than it is a physical law.
Right.
That says, you know, it's going to get faster, twice as fast every 18 months and half the size. And we're running out of that. That limit's running out. And part of the, if you want to think about a device, the speed of the device is, can be directly related to the distance from the source and the drain on a field effect transistor. So you talk about the gate width, and so it's
right, so it's inversely related. The smaller you can make it?
The smaller you can make it,
the quicker
the speed. But it's got a certain velocity there, and that velocity, if you think about bigger devices, an electron going from the source to the drain scatters off impurities, it scatters off, to some extent, other electrons, not really so much important there. But it basically does a random walk of colliding against various other structures, impurities, defects, going from source to drain. Ballistic transport is more like what you used to have in the vacuum tubes, where it goes from point A to point B without scattering against anything. So this ballistic transport is this almost into, and to do that in silicon, you've got to get things so small that it's nothing for it to bump into.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
That's correct, yeah. And well, carbon nanotubes were the first objects to show that graphene materials could transport electrons over huge distances, relatively huge, microns. So that's very far before it would hit anything.
Wow.
And that was at room temperature even. And that was an amazing thing. And so, of course, when people...
Let me insert here. So the room temperature business means if you've got attribute or characteristic that only happens when you super cool it to liquid nitrogen or liquid helium, you don't have a manufacturable process. You may have some interesting physics, but you're not going to make this.
That's right.
And so one of the other things that scatters electrons in a silicon device is the fact that it's well above room temperature, actually, and the atoms in the lattice are moving about, and when the electron's going through, it may scatter against an out-of-place, you know, maybe a perfect lattice, no defects, all that kind of stuff, but it's moving around, so it's going to scatter. Why don't you get that in graphene?
Well, one of the reasons is that the graphene is so rigid that actually the energy required to move these atoms around is huge. An electron cannot cause that motion. That's the problem, one of the problems that you face with silicon, that it's much easier to cause these vibrations than it is in graphene. And the others are far more subtle, having to do with the electronic structure of graphene itself.
So this electron, so if you make the sort of lay out the structure again, imagine a flat sheet with nothing but carbon atoms, and then you've got these, each carbon atom has four electrons that are there to bond. Where do these extra electrons come from?
Well, what happens is that in carbon, it's bonded to its three neighbors, like in a honeycomb. So if you look at the corners in a honeycomb, you see every corner is connected to three other ones. So that would require three electrons, but carbon has four. So the fourth electron has nowhere to go. And what it really does is just sits above and below the sheet, really. And they are free electrons that can move around over the top and the bottom of the graphene sheet, virtually not participating in the bonding at all. So that's very unique for graphite, basically, and graphene. And that is the root cause of the fact that these electrons can move so freely, because they're really not participating in the chemical bonding itself. That is an important part of it.
So you don't. So in silicon, you have to introduce impurities in order to create the electrons that
that's
can participate
correct.
In conduction. Here, you don't have to do any impurities?
That's right. And that's a benefit and a disadvantage, actually, at the same time, funny enough. Because actually, a graphene is not a semiconductor like silicon. So, and to do electronics, you actually need a semiconductor. And there's a subtlety there, too. But there's a trick where you can turn graphene into a semiconductor is by making very narrow, small structures. A carbon nanotube is a good example of that. A carbon nanotube is a very narrow graphene ribbon rolled up onto itself. And because it's so small, you turn it into a semiconductor. And that is very amazing that you can have a material whose properties can be changed from basically more metal-like to semiconducting simply by changing its shape. And that is a key to graphene.
So why is making it nanoscale really, how does that alter the physical properties?
Okay, so that is actually, will tie everything together. So if you look at a carbon nanotube, it's very small, it's 1 nanometer in diameter, and it has a semiconducting property. If you take a broad graphene ribbon, it's more like a metal. So in the carbon nanotube world, what people wanted to do is to connect everything up with metal wires. So you'd have a semiconducting nanotube and metal wires. But therein was the problem, how to do that. In graphene, you can do something much simpler. You can start with a wide piece of graphene, which would be like a metal, and then you neck it down to become something very narrow, which becomes a semiconductor. So now you can have basically a junction, metal to semiconductor, without even changing material.
Wow.
So you can do everything out of one material only. And that was actually the foundation of my insight, why this stuff would be great for electronics.
Wow. So let me kind of back up again. So if you think about a semiconductor device, you got the silicon, which is actually, silicon is just one row above carbon in the periodic table. So you'd think it's got kind of the same properties pretty much.
It's one row below, right? Extra shell of electrons. Silicon's bigger than carbon?
I mean, silicon's
carbon's
bigger than carbon.
That's what I meant.
Right. It's bigger than carbon. But there, if you're going to electrically connect, so you've got to introduce impurities like boron or phosphorus into it to make it conductive, and you've got to make some kind of interconnect, some ohmic contact, so you put a different kind of metal or metal alloy to get from a wire to it, and now that's been one of the problems with thinking about, well, how do you conduct along a carbon nanotube if you got to make an ohmic contact to this thing that's so big. So essentially, for this, the metal wire, when you shrink it down to nanoscale, it becomes its own ohmic contact.
Right. And cool. that is really very, very important, because what happens is that the metal contacts in graphene electronics will not heat up. And that's one of the most fragile points of electronics. Exactly at those junctions where everything gets very, very small, the electrons tend to deposit the heat there. And if they do that, those contacts will start to burn up, or electromigration and other bad things happen. But in graphene structures, the electrons will just go through those junctions without causing any heat there. Heat will be deposited other places.
So another aspect of silicon is that when people make all these predictions about what's going to happen in the future, is there more and more transistors in a smaller space, you see these predictions that it's going to be as hot as the sun, in another 15 years.
Right.
Now, this is projecting out, and you know, obviously that's not going to work out too well, but the localized temperature is incredibly high in silicon.
That's right, and that's one of the big advantages that graphene promises, to remove that heat problem. And heat in power dissipation in your computers and all, that's a very, very serious issue. It's already an important contributor to the energy balance in the United States, for example, and it's only getting worse. So that is a very important part to take care of this heat And that's another
point. And just to put that in perspective for those of you geeks out there that are cruising Micro Center as we speak, you know, what you do is when you put that quad-core processor, you know, either from Intel or an advanced AMD processor in there, you will put this giant aluminum metal chunk that has fans. You'll put a giant fan on that. And in fact, then what you'll do is you'll put a paste in between them that either has silver or actually some of the new ones have diamond. Because even though the tetrahedral version diamond doesn't conduct electrons too well, it still conducts heat pretty well, and you'll do all this just to get all the heat out of that thing. Right. So this is going to solve that
or
problem.
Or one alternative been proposed is like creating a suntan parlor, a tanning parlor right next to the
dual
computer.
Use, right? Dual so you use. Just have these glowing.
Yeah, it's kind of like the ice.
And Snooki can
coolant,
come in, sit next to the quad core processor.
You got the you know, sort of the redneck tanning booth there. Sit lay next. Never mind.
All right, but let me just put this in perspective for our listeners out there who are thinking, "What are these guys talking about?" And this is something that I always found amazing about graphene, because those of us that struggle trying to do lithography smaller and smaller and smaller with all these mixed metals and metal oxides, some of which now are actually becoming pretty rare. So you're mixing with metals. Silicon's very abundant. Carbon's very abundant. But some of these weird metals aren't. Imagine chicken wire, right? So think of chicken wire that basically has sort of this hexagon structure. And the flat one is graphene. And if you could put down as one single layer that's much thinner than we can get, it's atomically thin, right? And then the carbon nanotubes that Walt was talking about before, folded into a, you know, reasonably small cylinder. There's your carbon nanotube. And then what you're saying is we take this chicken wire and we cut it such that it has narrowing gaps. Right. The electronic properties change so that you can go from conductor, which you need, right? And the biggest problem is if I'm going to use metal vias, copper or something like that, how do I hook a carbon nanotube to a metal?
Right,
a so what is that, Italian for street via, right?
Latin.
That's very tough to do. But if it's all carbon, you could do it. And here's what I'm thinking, though. To make all these structures, all out of carbon, be a beautifully elegant, efficient process, are there science and engineering problems associated with doing
you
that?
You betcha.
Okay.
That's where, of course, that's really a big deal. We've been working on that very heavily. So people know that graphene is going to work best if you can make really very small structures on the order of nanoscale with them. Trouble there is that to do this with a standard electronic techniques, you need really sophisticated devices like e-beam lithographers and other things that can make these extremely small structures. And then another problem comes up when you start cutting in the graphene with all these tools. What happens, you make pretty ragged edges, and your pretty graphene has a problem that the edges are all messed up. So what to do about that? And that is a very serious problem. In fact, we anticipated that, and we're working on this. So as another aspect of what we're doing is we don't have the graphene sheet simply hanging there in outer space. We actually grow it on another material. We grow it on a material called silicon carbide. Now, silicon carbide is a semiconductor, much like silicon. It's one of the very high-performance semiconductor that's used in very high-power electronics already. And it turns out it's very easy to make a graphene layer on it. But how do you do that? Well, you simply take the silicon carbide, that's a combination of silicon and carbon, and you heat it up, and the silicon evaporates from the surface, and then a carbon layer remains. Well, that's really nice. So you can make these carbon or graphene layers on top of the silicon carbide with very little problem. But
hold on. I take a silicon carbon wafer.
Silicon carbide.
Silicon carbide wafer, sorry. That's just got silicon and carbon in it, right?
Yes.
And I just heat it up to what temperature?
About 1,500 centigrade.
Okay.
It's very, very hot.
Right. So 1,500 centigrade, and basically the silicon evaporates, and I can do it in a controlled manner so that I only get one atomic layer of carbon. Wow.
Well, yeah, it takes a little work, and much of my research is exactly in figuring out to make exactly one layer, and you can make two or three, but to make precisely one is a trick. And so that's what you spend years of research work on. But actually, that's not where the story ends. It's almost where it starts. So, but you have to control the growth. Well, we recently discovered something else. It turns out if you take your silicon carbide and you don't have it flat, but you actually start making structures on it, like a step. Mm-hmm. So you just cut a step on the silicon carbide, like a step down, and you heat it up again. Then the graphene will only form on the side of the steps, not on the top and the bottom. You can control that. And this is a way to make basically a material that when you heat it up, all these structures will come out as soon as you take it out of the oven. So that is what we're working on. And in that case, you can circumvent a lot of the complicated lithography steps that are destructive.
Wow.
And the lithography steps, we've talked about these with Cliff Henderson previously on the program, where you will shoot light in a certain pattern to develop these things, and you could put polymers on
them.
It's
like photography, basically.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what it is. And they suffer from that horribly. I mean, the reason you like to use electron beams is the same reason many of you people are buying Blu-ray players. Electron beams have a shorter wavelength than a lot of the actual light. We call it visible light. It's really almost at the X-ray level now. But the shorter the wavelength is, the smaller the features you can make. And they are plagued by this, right? So I would think that you'd have the same problem. You have a material that, in theory, could have atomic resolution.
Yes.
They can't even get there. And they're worried about 50, 60 nanometers and roughness and things like that.
Now, this Sunday, an article of ours will come out in Nature magazine that explains this new technique that we developed that really circumvents exactly this very important and difficult problem of making graphene structures that are fine enough and that also has edges that aren't rough, because that's another problem. These lithography steps are very rough procedures, in fact. So,
just to kind of clarify that, so if you think about making a photograph, which is really what the photolithography is, if you look at it in a microscope, but you've got, it's not very highly magnified, it may look like you've got a smooth edge, but when you start looking at the atomic level, it ain't smooth anymore.
That's right. You'll see the grains. In fact, if you take any photograph and blow it up a lot, you will see it looks pretty grainy.
Right.
And that's the same problem, only on the atomic scale, what happens with most lithographies. So that is a serious issue and one that needs to be solved, one of the many problems that needs to be solved. In fact, we can say that right now graphene has a lot of green lights, so a lot of things look right. But the technology to develop this for real, that's going to take a bit.
Well, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about this technology. You're listening to Walt Tahir from the School of Physics here at Georgia Tech, talking about graphene and its application in microelectronics. If you've got a question or a comment about it and you're listening to us live Wednesdays noon to 1, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. We'll be right back on Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.
For all the best and craziest electronic music, tune in every Wednesday evening here on WRAK Atlanta from 7 to 9 p.m. to the movies.
Join your host, Matt and Joss, on a space ride through future fun. From industrial to IDM, from noise core to bit rock, dub, ambient, and everything in between.
In future, everyone's going to say, come down to the library, we'll have a wild time.
Spend a week in a dusty library, waiting for some words to jump in me. We met by a trick of fate.
Lost in the Stacks is the one and only research library rock and roll radio show. Every Friday at noon, Amit and Charlie from the Georgia Tech Library pick a theme and free associate an hour of music, interviews, and library talk.
You'll hear indie rock, pop rock, alt rock, new wave, and some random stuff we dig out of the vaults. In between music sets, we interview students, faculty, and librarians about Georgia Tech, libraries, and whatever else we can think of.
Lost in the Stacks is on every Friday at noon for your lunchtime library needs. Whatever you tune in for, we hope you dig it.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, and we're talking with Walt here about making these very fine structures of graphene with a new technique. And a fellow researcher, Sir Harry Croteau, who works in, you know, these graphitic structures, namely Buckminster Fullerene, said the key to success is having a good acronym, a good name, and obviously his was Buckyball.
He didn't say that. He just said it helped.
Okay. Yeah. It helped. So no good acronym for this yet?
Sorry.
All right.
I'll ask Harry to help me out with
that. Okay, we'll put Bill on this, too. He's good about that.
You know, he actually, is it graphic work he does for companies coming up with logos?
Oh, he is a graphic designer.
He has some little side thing that's purely creative like that, sort of quasi-marketing. But so how do you make it? So in a transistor, you've got P-type and N-type. Do you worry about whether it's electrons or holes?
Yes, we do. And we can modify, we can make it hole doped or electron doped chemically. That's relatively easy to do.
Do you add other materials?
Yes.
You
can add a material on top, and that will transfer electrons into the graphene. In fact, the way we grow it on the silicon carbide, by a natural process, the silicon carbide will donate electrons to the graphene, so it typically comes out N-doped. Hmm. It turns out if you just expose it to atmosphere for a little while, water will stick to the top of it and will P-dope it, so you already have two dopings there for
free. Holy Moses.
Yeah.
Do you want to remind us of the difference of that, of whether you're conducting it with an electron or the absence thereof?
Yeah, a simple way to think of it that's not quite accurate is that the N-type doping, N for negative, is electrons, so the carriers, charge carriers, are electrons that move around, and the P-type doping for positive is holes, and you think of them simply as positive charges, and you know, you can look at quantum mechanics and it's the absence, it's a vacancy that gets filled, but anyway, just think of it as positive and negative
charges. By doping you're putting small amounts of other compounds to change these properties, and it's not that Bill's sniffing glue,
even though
he sounds like
it. So for graphene, it sounds like it's not that you don't mess with the graphene layer, it's more you put a different layer on top of it.
That's right.
Cool. I'm getting like
he's getting goosebumps over
I'm
here.
I'm getting excited about graphene here. This
we may
is
have
really
to turn
neat.
The hose on.
Well, I mean,
sure.
The other, yeah, do go ahead, turn the hose on. part of the thing, if you look at the history of, so people have been looking into alternative ways to allow you to continue increasing the speed, lowering the size. I mean, there's X-ray lithography efforts, E-beam lithography efforts.
Yeah, and that's just decreasing that wavelength, like your blue
gallium nitride, you know, on and on and on, high electron mobility transistors to have higher speed. And those have, various things have found utility. But, it's interesting here that, again, was it that all the vectors are pointing up, or, you know, there's a lot of positive things about this? I mean, so this, you know, I mean, this almost looks like this might be the answer.
Well, yeah, I kind of think you have to look at a very broad perspective when you're looking at electronics. We tend to be quite narrow and think about incremental growth. But in electronics itself, over the past 100 years, we've seen us going from basically nothing first to vacuum tubes, to the first transistors. And I want to remind people that when the first transistors were made, people did not know you could do anything with them other than make transistor radios. Then the integrated circuit came, et cetera, et cetera. But the important shifts here to look at is when people had vacuum tube electronics, and everyone knows those things, and then you went to condensed matter or solid-state electronics, and that was a big deal because that's what you call a paradigm shift. The entire way of doing electronics shifted. Now what we're looking at might be very similar. Graphene might not simply be a continuation of silicon because there's many other properties that are very different in graphene than in silicon. And I'll give you a few examples. The first thing is you can make these structures extremely small, and you can also play with what's called the wavelength of the electrons themselves. Electrons are not just little BBs running around in a material. What they are actually, when you get down to it, they're waves. And in graphene, this is abundantly clear that they have this property. So ultimately, and I do believe that in 100 years or so, we're going to look at transistors that might be made up of 100 or so atoms, and the electrons are actually interfering with each other like they do in light. Now, the semiconductor industry is looking heavily at these, what they call different state variables. So the electronic charge is a state variable, and the wavelength is a state variable. And you have something called spintronics that you can also do with electrons, which uses another property of the electrons. Well, ultimately, all this stuff is going to be used in electronics without any doubt. The question is when. And if graphene is going to be the way to address or use all these properties, again, is another question.
Well, what's your guess? Because part of the, you know, one of the negative things said about gallium arsenide from the beginning was it was the technology of the future, and it always will be.
Yes. Well, so.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's kind of like Dippin' Dots, right? You go out to the water park, and it says Dippin' Dots, ice cream of the future.
Yeah.
Apparently, the future ice cream will look like little rabbit pellets or something like that. But it's been the ice cream of the future since 1972 when I first saw it.
Really? Wow.
Maybe like 68.
But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I mean, sometimes people are right about that. And with gallium arsenide, one of the issues, I mean, you can make lasers out of it and all this, but, you know, it was trying to stay ahead of this Moore's Law business. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not a natural law. It's just that the industry was putting enough funding into getting to that next point and identifying, you know, roadblocks and all that kind of stuff. So is there a feeling that this has to bear fruit within X number of years in order to keep people interested, or?
Well, let me actually give an analogy I usually do when trying to make this a little bit clearer how this goes. And I think the analogy we're looking at right now is that between what we've seen in transportation. If you look around 1900, then you had ships, and ships could, you know, sail the oceans and put tons and tons of material in there, and it's an extremely well-developed technology. Well, if you look at a ship made in 1900 and a ship made now, it looks almost identical. Same materials, same speeds, more or less, just a little more fancy now. But what happened in 1900 or around that time, airplanes started to come. So these couple of people were working in their garage and made something they had to pedal around, and they could fly a little distance. So could you imagine what would happen if somebody asked these guys, you know, you think this is a technology that could be competitive against shipping? You can never do it. You can't fly a ton of material any distance for any reasonable price.
Right.
So the message here is airplanes and boats do exactly the same thing. They transport things, but they have different functions. And the airplane industry use different materials, does it in a different way. My guess is what you're going to really see is that silicon electronics, just like shipping, is going to continue as it has. It's going to incrementally get better and better. And it's going to do the same thing as it does right now, do the heavy lifting of electronics. But a new electronic market based on these other state variables like graphene, probably really expensive, but it can do really special things. And we're already seeing that. Right now, very high-frequency transistors are being made out of graphene at IBM and Hughes Research Labs. They both made transistors that are going in the 100 gigahertz ranges, and the prediction is it'll go to 1,000 gigahertz within a year or so. So we will have 1,000 gigahertz, 1 terahertz transistors. They're on the horizon, made out of graphene. So that doesn't mean you're going to have computers running at this speed, because these transistors are actually very big. They're far too big to fit into the standard integrated circuit technology. They're going to be basically doing only that, making, say, amplifiers and generators for terahertz frequencies, maybe finding themselves in niche markets in the military or in cell phones or God knows what. And slowly but surely, it's going to be integrated into silicon. Probably you're going to have computers with a very small area working with graphene integrated into the standard CMOS technology. Hmm. That is the way I think we're going to see this happening. Wow. I don't know if that answered your question, but you should not see this as a so-called disruptive technology where one gets replaced by the other, but a parallel technology like shipping and aviation.
But that happens a lot. I mean, if you think about electronics, when we first had integrated circuits, you put them on large circuit boards, and we still had macro-sized passive resistors, capacitors, potentiostats. Mm-hmm. Those are disappearing from the modern circuit board. But I remember taking a soldering iron to circuit boards to fix the passives around there. Mm-hmm. Now they're trying to integrate it all, but that makes perfect sense.
Well, and I mean, I've still got the vacuum tube radio that was my grandfather's, and it works probably better than any other radio in the house for listening to AM radio.
Yeah, for those applications.
My son bought a custom 36 guitar amp, and he loves the tone. It's a natural tone. Vacuum tube technology. So it's just that that used to be all of the electronics, the early computers and everything was vacuum tubes. And it's just taken a less, it hasn't completely been driven to extinction, but it's taking a less role. And like you say, with the invention of the integrated circuit, all of a sudden you had a gestalt shift and people were thinking, wow, we can do lots of devices on a small area. And then it just sort of, so you can't really tell what's coming in the future. But I think I like this aspect of graphene that, you know, there's so many things you can do. Apparently you don't really have to worry about oxidation
at
the surface, which is huge. That's a big problem with gallium arsenide. So if you just leave it out in the air.
Yeah, graphene doesn't oxidize, does it?
No. Well, it burns when you make it hot enough.
Right, right.
Yeah, but it doesn't, you know, silicon.
Yeah, at room temperature, you're right.
Silicon surface, it oxidizes. That's why he's, why the heck with it, we'll do the silicon.
No, SiO2. That's the native oxide surface.
Yeah,
you can't not have that
You can't
surface.
Not have oxidized surface, but this doesn't oxidize.
Wow. No, it's very stable, absolutely.
So aside from these really high-frequency transistors, are there other applications that you see in the
See what I see happening is first the high-frequency transistors as a niche market, and then people will start investigating the material more and more, and that's what we need, and that's what I'm fighting for, keeping your foot in the door and keep interest alive. Live because you need research to be done, and a lot of it, and very directed towards the problems you're facing, making them smaller and more efficient. And then I think that we're going to see some important breakthroughs, let's say, or developments in the next 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. But let me already say that graphene is on the ITRS roadmap, the semiconductor roadmap, it's listed in there as an alternative to silicon. Already the semiconducting industry is investing heavily in looking at the future of this stuff. We're not going to see this in your home computer in the next decade. I do not think that's going to happen.
But nothing happens. And the electronics industry, you know, we work on little incremental changes. And when you go to Intel or IBM or AMD and say, oh, we've got this change and it can boost things by 70%, they laugh at you and they remind you that the fabrication line costs billions of dollars. But once it makes it on the roadmap is basically saying, look, we are committed to researching this.
Right.
And that means they're going to do it because there's a lot of money involved in that. But I think, well, you're making the same plea that everybody makes, is that none of this stuff happens overnight. It first starts with concepts that no one has any idea that it might ever be applied to anything. And the only way to get it engineered and working that way is to keep doing really fundamental physics and science research.
But that's focused. So it's not, you know, just sort of, let's do whatever we want to do today.
But it's how to figure out how to taper it, how to shape it, how to make these steps. Yes.
And the smooth edges don't have a ragged.
Yeah, line edge roughness, this is something that has plagued the semiconductor industry for decades.
Right. So. And it's exactly these problems. And it's a technology that needs to be developed, and it's going to be a slow process and a difficult one. But the thing about that, there are no red lights, no real red lights, what they call showstoppers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a clear sometimes, constraint.
Sometimes you have a technology that's developing where they say, well, we have no idea how to solve this problem, but that problem needs to be solved. In graphene, there is no such show-stopping problem that that I know of, at least at this point. And that's a very great positive.
Well, you can also look at, you know, the trajectory of things. If you've got a large, you know, if you've got a new material, it takes a long time for all the process aspects of that to get worked out, but it sounds like a lot of those are kind of naturally, not naturally getting worked out, but they are easy to solve more so than some of the other materials. Like you might have something you can't get etched very easily and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So.
But, you know, it is carbon. We do know something about mm-hmm. carbon.
Right.
All right, we've come to the end of the show where we try to address what have we learned. Okay, so let me take a crack at this, and then you gentlemen can tell me where I messed up here. So I actually learned something kind of interesting. The fact that you put this in a sheet, and we didn't really talk about the electronic structure, but that's exactly what's so neat about this material mm-hmm. is you've got these, you mentioned it before the show, these pi electrons that occur in double bonds. But what's neat is you actually have electrons that aren't participating in the bonding, which leaves them free to travel in long paths without bumping into another electron or something like that. And that's what you mean by ballistic. It moves mm-hmm. like a bullet. You could see examples of this. For example, you make these little double bonds, every other bond in a polyethylene molecule, and suddenly polyethylene becomes conductive. But because it's not this stable allotrope of carbon, you pull it out in air, and in 5 minutes, it turns black and degrades, and you lose all these properties. So mm-hmm. that's what makes this really amazing. And then if you think about it, the fact that you can manipulate it this way, you can make it both the conductor and the semiconductor, right? So mm-hmm. you can do the whole thing out of carbon is really pointing to the fact that this may be the first big paradigm shift in microelectronics mm-hmm. research
in a long time.
And as much as there's lots and lots of work to be done, and of course, we always mention that because we'd like to see more research money going into this. There's no clear limiting constraints that are going to prevent this from being used.
Right.
And I got to say, I'm encouraged by the fact that it's on the semiconductor industry roadmap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we wait for the government to put enough funds into this, and a lot of times they do. But once it's
sometimes
on that roadmap, that's a very encouraging thing. Mm-hmm. I also learned why graphite works for the Pinewood Derbies. Mm-hmm. And we did agree, don't mm-hmm. put Cub Scouts in a high vacuum situation.
But I thought it was really cool that it's just what you don't disturb the layer. It's what layer you put on top of it that makes it P-type or N-type.
Right, so the doping really goes right on top of it, and you still preserve this nice, stable structure. Mm-hmm. And there are already some interesting niche markets, such as these very, very high-frequency transistors, mm-hmm. and maybe the future will be that this will slowly integrate into the silicon-based integrated circuit mm-hmm. technology and then evolve all on its own mm-hmm. to bring about the future of microelectronics.
Yeah. Cool.
Do we leave anything out there?
I don't think so, man. This is really neat. Thank you, Walt, for coming on the program.
Thank you for being on the program. If you've got a question or comment about this program or a suggestion for a future show, by all means, send us an email at comments@insidetheblackbox.org. Our chief engineer is Trent Altman. Our theme music is performed and written by Bill and Mary Hunt. And we are a production of the WREK Studios.
Don't leave out the song Graphene.
Oh, yes. Graphene, available on the B-side.
Yeah, and we'll put the lyrics up on the website.
We'll do that, because it actually is
lyrics by Professor Andy Zangwill in physics, and guitar and vocals by Professor Paul Neitzel.
Paul Neitzel and his Gant band. What's the name of his band?
The Paul Neitzel Band. I don't know what
it is. But it's like it's a band.
Doctor, something
band
like that.
A band of old geezers.
That all have PhDs or MDs. Yes.
All right, and again, we are a production of the WRK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.